Thank you, Bishu. Sai Ram to all listeners of Radio Sai. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, welcoming you all to yet another episode of Shravanam Mananam Nividhyasanam. Every week, every Thursday, as the penultimate show on our Thursday Live, myself, Prem, and with me, Sai Prakash, join you for this episode of Shravanam Mananam Nividhyasanam, wherein we listen to Swami's discourses with an intention of trying to delve deep into what Swami says, giving Swami all our attention. As Swami says, Shravanam is when you try to still the mind as much as possible and then listen. Swami often says that Mananam, which is done with the mind, is done after the Shravanam is done, and not at the same time. These are all very, very, not very simple tasks that Swami has left us with, but we try as much as possible to do this Shravanam Mananam with the prayer that Nididhyasanam, or the assimilation or absorption, happens. Dear listeners, this week we're being joined by a very special guest, but before I go ahead and introduce him to all of you, I offer on behalf of all of us present here a most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet and express our gratitude for giving us this opportunity. Sai Ram, Sai Prakash, and maybe I'll give you the honor of introducing our guest to the listeners.
Sai Ram listeners, as Prem just said, we have a very special guest with us, Professor
G.V. Prabhakar Rao.
Professor Prabhakar Rao, sir, who has been heading the Maths and Computer Science Department in our institute.
Currently, sir is an honorary professor at the Department of Mathematics and Computer Science. Of course, this is a very, very constrained way of introducing sir. Sir has come here a good 3 decades ago, and we all as students have a lot of respect.
Well, I really wished you would have given me the opportunity to speak about that part of sir.
Yeah, you still have.
So, you know, in many interactions with sir, I have always felt that he is somebody who is really here for the serious stuff, quote unquote, the serious stuff, where sir is always very keen in following Swami's discourses and has always been very sincere in trying out many of the things that Swami has taught in his personal life. And it's a great opportunity to just bump into him at various times and talk about Swami, because he takes you to a totally different realm of loving Swami. And I think that is the most important criterion for us to get together. And as I think in this section of the discourse, Swami talks about satsang. What else can be holier than getting together and speaking about Swami? With that brief introduction, I think we should get on to trying to summarize what Swami spoke in this discourse last week.
Yes, sir. And again, a warm welcome to sir. It's a pleasure to have you, sir, on the show. Yes, sir.
My prayerful pranams at Bhagavan's lotus feet. It's very kind of these boys to say so many nice words about me. Well, Bhagavan has given me so much, probably told me so many things which happened during the time. But nevertheless, talking in a casual way to the students sitting in some place is something else. And trying to talk something on Swami's discourse is an entirely different profession. And I should admit that I'm not for it. But anyway, I'm here. I hope I'll be able to do some justice for you. I thank these people, and also I welcome and Sai Ram to all the listeners. Sai Ram to you all.
Sir, actually, before we just go into this discourse, you were present in 1990 when Swami actually gave these discourses.
Yeah, yeah.
And as I understand, this discourse, this series started after a long gap.
Yes.
After about 10-year gap.
Right.
And so how was it? What was it was for the first time Swami is giving these discourses to the students, right?
Definitely. You see, after the break in that summer course, normally Swami used to give discourses in the mandir. And he used to come to the college, particularly when the MBA program was started. He used to come regularly, talked about various topics. And during a particular period, he gave a series of discourse on Atma Vidya. All that used to happen, but it used to benefit only Prashantinilayam campus and few places. And therefore, I think he decided to have a summer course in the beginning of the semester where all the students of Swami's institutions are brought together. And the kind of life those 15 days is entirely different. Probably all those who were not fortunate enough to go to Kodaikanal to be with him. And I think this is the second best thing that could have happened in their lives. And for us, we were welcome, our families were welcome, our children were welcome, and we were all taken care of. So those 15 days was a heaven for us. Besides lots of discourses from various people, and Swami always talks on a continuous theme. Time to time he will visit the lunch sessions and then attend the other sessions. Sometimes he will help. So it's entirely a different life. So those 15 days would prepare all the students for the rest of the semester, rest of the year. So it's a kind of a preparatory, introductory course. And since most of the discussion there is related to what is dear to Swami, and students get perfectly tuned to the aims and objectives of the institute, and there was no need for us to tell anything more during the session, during the year. So that was one of the greatest opportunities the students in those 3-4 years had the benefit.
For many of the listeners who may not know, sir was also handling the camera which he had for many years. And sir, were you still taking video at that time in 1990?
No, 1999 I did not take. Actually, 1984, just before the Balvika session started, Swami gave me permission to use the video. And I think I used it for 3 or 4 years, and then after that video was not working well.
Sir.
And then I think I got few other things onto my hands, so I just left it.
But as you mentioned in one of our casual conversations, it really helped you to concentrate and focus on Swami.
Definitely. You see, when you are looking through the lens,
yeah,
your total focus is only on Him and what is happening around. You are totally oblivious to the things which are happening around. So that really helps you to do that. In fact, I think that's the reason why Swami used to give lots of cameras to students, ask them to take photographs and all. That gets their attention diverted now. Because you give a camera to the student, he's all the time thinking, where is Swami? When can I get a photograph? And so without telling anything, he knew the tricks as to how to make them pay attention to him. So that was one of those things he used to do.
In fact, I was in touch with one of my seniors who was regularly taking video at that time. And Swami had given him strict instructions not to take anything else except himself. And he would always wonder, at that time he didn't understand, because if there was a drama, the entire drama in the tape, you get only the audio, because the camera is focused only on Swami.
Yeah.
And Swami didn't want the camera to go this way, that way. But he says, now when I think of it, how compassionate it was of Swami to just make him focused on himself.
No, but to me, he told me to take both.
Okay.
Many times he wanted, hey, why are you taking me only? I brought here to take that. Once he took me to Anantapur to shoot the sports meet for girls.
Okay.
So as we used to do, we used to shoot few things to Swami. He said, look, your battery is limited. You just concentrate on them. Take the shots of sports meet. You always have my photographs later. Don't worry about it. Things like that he used to tell. And he used to tell occasions what to do. But still, it was not easy in those days to do this kind of, because there was no support, and then there was not much of help from others. And we also did not know when Swami will approve something or he will not approve. That kind of apprehensions were there. But nevertheless, as far as I was concerned, he was very kind. He allowed me to do.
No, but
he made me wait almost 1.5 years before he could give me permission to do that work.
Okay.
Because I brought my camera in 82. He gave me permission only in 84 to do that, just before the Balvikas rally.
That's true, but just thinking of the whole thing, in spite of Swami putting a lot of restrictions, still there is so much of footage available. That is Swami's compassion.
That's it. In fact, if I look back, it was all planned. Mm-hmm. The way I brought the camera here and started doing itself is a story by itself.
Okay.
And there are too many things which happened while bringing it.
No, even this program, particular program, Shravanam Mananam, we cannot be doing Shravanam if Swami had not allowed his discourse to be recorded. And
that's
because
right.
we have the recording of his discourse, we are able to go back to the original, and every time we go back to the original, it gives us a new dimension.
Yeah, but sometimes he has objected. There was one occasion he was giving a discourse on Bhagavad Gita.
Mm.
So I asked him, Swami, I will tape these things, these discourses, they are very... He said, no need, why do you want to put your video all that? You just listen to it. You see, if you put a video, then you want to listen to it, you need a television, you need current, you need all that. You just listen, record it in your heart. You just close your record, how is the discourse comes on, you see, Swami, why you want to waste it? So he didn't allow me to record that.
But fortunately, Swami has allowed an audio recording.
Audio recording was there all the time. So it has been there right from the very beginning.
Correct.
So, and I think you should, one of these days, talk to Dr. Prasad. He has got fantastic experiences in audio recording. One instance I tell you.
Sir.
Swami gave a discourse. Everything was discussed. He was about to return back. He said, hey, anni edi nu sariga chusukovi ikkada chudu. He just sat and lifted the carpet next to his table.
Mm-hmm.
The table, the cable connecting the mics and to
the speakers.
Speakers or the amplifier was disconnected. He spoke the whole discourse and the discourse was heard by everybody and they were not connected. You can't believe that. You see, that kind of experience is so many. But in fact, he made me to work with Dr. Prasad for about 4 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so during that period, I liked lots of things. And he's a very, very strict, devoted person. He will not even press a switch without saying Sai Ram. That kind of a person.
Very true.
So, I mean, then I realized, you know, I was not at all interested in audio work and microphones, all that. But he made me go there. And then I learned lots of things from them, the way they work, how they were devoted. So that was a great experience.
Sir, actually, when we listen to people and when we recollect our association and life with Swami, all that he tells in his discourses, without us knowing, he makes it happen in our lives. Like, you have to concentrate on God, you return inwards. He makes it such that you always concentrate on Him.
Yeah.
Without actually making us feel that this is a lesson that you have to go through, it automatically, with love, He does everything.
No, you see, things are happening around us all the time.
Yes.
And it's only that we have to recognize those things. Mm. You see, only few people have an opportunity to see Him physically, and only few people have opportunity to be close to Him and observe Him. But there are millions of devotees. For example, when I was in Nigeria, I've seen some devotees, I've never seen Him. I met one fellow, he simply said, I've stopped non-vegetarian. Why? I said, Swami came in my dream and said, don't eat non-vegetarian. I have stopped. He didn't eat. See, so that way, there are many people who have never seen Swami, but they have experienced Him, they have felt Him, and they became devotees. So the way Swami works with people is amazing. Amazing. Before you think you can do something, He is already there. I had a cousin. He read one book, he got so excited and he thought he will go and speak about Swami. So went to one of his bosses and started telling all that. The man heard very closely, very patiently and said, have you been to Prashantanilayam? No. I said, then why are you telling all this? No, I read this book, I'm excited. Oh, I see. I have been to Prashantanilayam 3 times. So that's how
amazing.
Things are. Very amazing. Very amazing.
Sir, the first time you came to Swami, you said you were very attracted to His message.
Yes.
What was it that...
No, not only first time. Even now, every time, the most amazing thing for me is the way He teaches you, the way He makes you understand things, the way He puts you to things. That is what exactly is the most important thing. And I have observed, no matter what activity He is doing, what is happening, His interest is in the individuals who are doing. He may be conducting, He may be watching a drama, watching the rehearsals, but His interest is in the people who are acting in the drama, and try to help them, try to see them, try to mold them, use an opportunity to tell them whatever He wants to convey them. Drama is only a secondary thing to bring them together or have an excuse for Him to be with them during that time. So that way His attention to individuals is extraordinary, and I don't think anybody else can do it, only He can do it. Simultaneously with so many people.
I think that's why I feel the summer course is especially special, because if Swami calls a group for an interview for 1 hour, you know, Swami would do a lot of things. Swami would materialize, Swami would inquire about family, Swami would do some small chat, but there will always be that message, you know, embedded.
Mm.
So if you were to see the entire summer course as an interview, you know, Swami comes for the dining sessions, Swami comes and distributes the pens and all those things and spends a lot of time. But that message part of that interview, which is the Samukos, is actually the Samukos discourses, where that Swami is packing his message in that 1 hour. So it's a very, very powerful thing, and as Sir was also telling
me. And again, he is very, very strict about things, you see. He will expect the people to take notes, he will give the books. Hmm. And then at the end of the summer course, there's an examination. And those who do well, they get prizes.
Correct.
And often every day, the students are picked up to summarize the discourses. Put that. So he makes sure that everybody is involved in it, no matter what is the kind of work. But everybody is involved, everybody is participating, his attention is on what is happening there. That he makes sure. And if anything is going wrong, he's there to put it back into the place. Hmm. For example, families come. You will find some work for them. You said, all right, you work in the kitchen, make this, this, do that. You keep them busy there. Children are there, you will give some work to the children. Mm. So that way, everybody is taken care of.
It's just like he's preparing you for life itself.
Yes.
And if you work in your life, orienting your every activity towards him, I think then it's a smooth. So, do you like to summarize what Swami has spoken so far?
Yeah, maybe the couple of points that Swami has made here, we could just recollect before going to the next clip, which is the third clip of the discourse. You know, as always, Swami starts with a beautiful poem which gives a summary of the whole discourse to come.
Correct.
Where Swami is saying that mind alone is the cause for man's rise and fall. It's responsible for bondage and liberation. That is how Swami starts with the definition of the mind, and then Swami gives the four functional aspects of the mind, or how the mind can be described and divided based on the functions it performs. Where Swami says, talks about manas, buddhi, chitta and ahankara. And Swami says that manas is that wavering, or that mind which goes after the senses or goes after cravings. Buddhi is the intellect or the discriminating mind. Chitta is the memory or the one which stores impressions from many lifetimes. And ahankara is that part of the mind which makes you think that you're an individual. Okay. You are separate from the whole. Sir, would you like to share any insights about this particular...
Actually, Swami gave a definition of Chitragupta. Everybody thinks that Chitragupta is an individual who maintains a record, all that. It is not that. Chitragupta, Chittamunandu Guptamuga Unnavadu Chitragupthudu. The one who is hiding inside your chitta is Chitragupta, and therefore he knows what are all thoughts you have went into there, what are all things you have got there, and therefore he is there. That's why he is called Chitragupta. He gave a nice definition for Chitragupta. So, I mean, that's what I was saying. So this kind of clarifications, only Bhagavan could do it, and I would say that I was always thrilled by this kind of way, because things we never thought about it, or things we could think we could not understand, difficult, made it so, so simple. And is it, for example, Atma, he will explain in a very simple way, he will understand things like that.
Mm.
And very often the kind of talks he would have, no, during the Varanda, or people, they are more valuable than sometimes things he thinks in the discourses.
That's true. Mm. In casual conversation,
conversations, sometimes he will bring out great truth in a very, very simple way.
I was just going through where Swami is telling, you know, explaining mind and Atma in a very, very simple way. Swami is saying mind is like the thief who has stolen away this jewel, which is the Atmic consciousness. Mm. So you want to get it back, you have to catch the mind, interrogate him, and you know, either you talk to him pleasingly or you punish him or do whatever and get back the jewel from him.
Wow. In so many different ways he brings out.
Right.
So then he goes on to describe what the mind is actually. It's just a bundle of thoughts. And here there's a very powerful statement. He says, thoughts, what are bad thoughts? He says, it is a bad thought that separates a man from a man and makes him forget the common divinity in them. So, just the thought that we are separate from each other itself is a bad thought, according to Swami. That comes in when he says how the mind is just a bundle of thoughts.
Yeah, actually he has said that the whole problem with human beings is the fear. There is a song, Yes and Bhayam, Bhayam, Bhayam.
Yes.
In that, after that he says, the main cause for the fear is the separateness. The every individual feels that he is different from one, even though he is actually the same. The fact that he thinks that he is different from that creates a fear in him. And that fear in turn creates all other problems in the human beings. And therefore seeing the unity among the human beings is the only solution to overcome this. That's what he said.
Wow.
And you know, the beautiful way which Rami gives here, he's saying, you know, understandably, if you go to a person who is quite uninitiated in the path and tell him that everybody is one, there is underlying unity. Instead of that, Swami is saying that you're an individual. Try to expand what you think as you are. Like, you know, from a man to a family to a society to your country, where you, you know, bring into your sphere of happiness as many people as possible. And that way expand and understand that you're all one in nature. You know, that's the point which Swami is making here. Yes, Swami says,
the peace of the individual as well as that of the world depends on that.
Right. Gradually from the individual level to the level of the family.
Correct.
To the community, the nation, and finally the whole world.
So that actually is related once to that Neti principle. You know, he alone has said that it is not this, it is not only this.
Right.
And in elucidating that, he said, one way is to expand yourself, that is Brahma. So first you bring your family, parents into your life, then your children, brothers, siblings, then friends, then others. So you keep on adding one after one into your circle of love. And there will be a day you will start loving everybody else. And then you are closer to God that day. The other thing is, remove everything. This is not this. This is what I don't want. This is not this. Start removing all that. Then there will be nothing left to you. Then again you are that.
Wow.
So both the directions are possibly point, but the other one is very easy. You enjoy it, you appreciate it as the time goes.
Then he goes on to give different colors for the mind.
Right.
Which is something very unique, which we have not heard before.
This, I think, Barnowski in his talks has explained that.
Correct.
The person of the aura of the person is related to the, some sense, the feelings the person has, the purity of the heart the person has got. And that gets reflected in that. So he has talked about it in one of his talks and the book.
Sir, being a computer science professor, is there a way you can explain? You know, here we have different aspects of the mind. We have manas, buddhi, chitta, ankara. And then, do you find any similarities?
Yeah, there is a great similarity between them. And in fact, I think that can clear out quite a few points. If people start thinking in those terms, it did help me in few things. First of all, the human body is the hardware of the computer.
Okay.
Of course, basically, since we are talking about, we are concerned about only the intellectual faculty, it is only the head that concerns. So all the gnanendriyas, they become the input-output devices.
Okay.
The karmendriyas have no relevance in this, but the gyanendriyas become input to that. And the three levels of the mind, they said, we have equivalence in the computers. We have the memory part of it. We have the hard disk where the things are stored. And we access things from the hard disk, put it to the RAM and execute. So sometimes we bring out our old thoughts into the mind, start thinking about it. That in turn creates some thoughts. Or thoughts which are there again, if they are good enough, they go and get stored up in your memory. So there is a close relationship between the three levels. That means these are the three levels which are given there by Swami, namely the manas, buddhi, and chitta. They essentially, in my view, they correspond to the storage, the execution part of it, and the buddhi corresponds to some kind of a logic which is used by schedulers and others, where different programs are picked up and executed from time to time. And if you look at the usual computing system, the programs are picked up, and they look for input outputs.
Okay.
But in our case, what happens is, it's a data-driven system. We see something that in turn creates some feelings, and that creates some resemblances or some what we call as associations, because the human mind is an associated memory.
More like a sensor.
It's not addressable memory, it's associative memory.
Oh.
So something which is related to that, a part of that content, will make us to bring out everything. You see somebody, we don't recognize him. Then he tells, no, on that day in the bus stand, I met you there, you asked me the train number, I gave you. Oh, right, I remember. So that way the human being memory is an associative memory. So once these inputs, outputs come there, they trigger those feelings and then they bring out thoughts. But what happens is that there is not a perfect control. As we keep seeing things, our mind keeps switching from one to another. So ultimately nothing achieved. And so what exactly all this being said is that if you start something, stick to that, continue the control the mind in such a way that a particular task has been picked up, is executed with one-mindedness. And then only you make some progress. So for concentration is what exactly is required. So if you don't have concentration, the mind keeps switching from one thing to another. Even when we are doing something, we are reading some, there are people who read and keep listening to the music and keep watching as well. So that is not exactly what is required. The more one is able to concentrate his mind, the more willpower comes and the power of human being comes. So what we lack is we do not have a perfect control of our mind. The way we are able to focus our minds like the great seers or great sadhakas do, whatever you say should comes to. That's what is required. And I think all the spiritual sadhana and what all that Swami has been trying to do to gain that. In other words, multitasking is good for computers, but for human beings, it is not good. You should basically be single task or batch processing systems would do well.
I mean, man has really created robots. He has created supercomputers, but he has not created a mind. Basically,
no, mind is not created. Actually, the mind part corresponds to the software part of the computing system. The brain is only the hardware part of it. The mind is essentially the software system which makes it do things. And how exactly the mind is there, I don't think it is clearly understood by many of the people. Probably those who are great seers, they have an idea about it. But otherwise, I think it's least understood concept. And that's where most of the experts in AI struggle with.
Correct.
They want to create a human being, something imitates, but they don't know how. For example, simple thing, I'm talking now, I read something, I remember it, I don't know how I remember that, how I am accessing it, how I am able to bring out those things, coin sentences,
the relevant things,
I do not know. I just do it. Somehow those algorithms which are being used are not known to me.
Correct.
But God has given that to us. During the process we learn, a child when he's born, it hardly knows anything. But then slowly over a period of time, it builds up program after program, algorithm after algorithm, it keeps adding to the things, and it becomes a human being.
But they must have done something like that when you talk of artificial intelligence, something which is a self-learning program.
Yeah, they have done. For example, there are programs which can play chess and they can play doing many other things, expert systems, all those things. But then again, these basic things, there are taken up together and then they are made into some kind of engineering the intelligence.
Okay.
So rule-based systems, things like that, they are built. They have their own limitations. The basic thing the mind has, like intuition and perception and things like that, they do not exist.
No wonder Swami throws the challenge
know
yourself.
And therefore, it is, in my view, it is impossible to create a mind. You can imitate few activities the mind can do. Like face recognition. You can build programs, you show them a few thousands of programs, train it, and next to say one day, so one of those programs it can recognize. But how exactly a human being recognizes faces, it is not understood at all. In various ways we understand. That's what exactly people are struggling.
So, getting back to the discourse on the mind, do you think we should start with the next
Shall
clip?
Shall we start with the next clip?
Sure.
The third clip in the discourse.
Wherever you turn this world, you come across fear. We you in the house, you are charged with fear. Go to the road, you are charged with fear. Board the rail or bus, you are charged with fear. Go to a board a plane, you are haunted by fear. Even if you want to walk up, you are haunted by fear. Even to be alone at home, you are haunted by fear. What is the cause for this kind of manavani endu undavalsinatundi yokka pavithramaina sankalpamulu nirmoolamainayi? The reason is that such sacred cause which should be there in a man are absent. Lokamanta kudunu bhayamayanga untundali. The entire world is filled with fear. Bhayam, bhayam, pratuku bhayam, 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 pratuku bhayam, annam. Manaki lokam pannina padma vyuhamu. Idanta kudunu padma vyuhanga tayaru cheyandi. This entire world has become something like a padma vyuha. Indulo bhayamtho koodi untunnadi. It is full of fear. Padma vyuham yokka rahasyam emiti? What is the secret of this padma vyuha? Praveshinchutam maatrame teliyadu kaani tirigi enaku tirigi vacheyatundi maatram teliyadu. See, the speciality is you know how to enter into this padma vyuha, but you do not know how to come out of it.
Abhimanyu nasu.
You are like Abhimanyu.
అందరూ అభిమన్యులే.
టుడే ఆల్ ఆర్ అభిమన్యుస్.
పేరు అభిమన్యులే కానీ ప్రవర్తన భిన్నులు.
The name is అభిమన్యు, but their behavior is different.
ఈనాడు ప్రపంచంలో మనం భోగ భాగ్యముల నిమిత్తమై ప్రవేశించడం మాత్రమే తెలియదు కానీ అందు నుంచి తప్పించుకుని వచ్చేటువంటిది మాత్రం తెలుసుకోవడం ప్రయత్నించడం లేదు.
Today we know how to enter into the world of enjoyments and indulgence, but we really do not know how to come out of it.
ఈ లౌకిక భోగ భాగ్యములు దుఃఖము నుండి ఆవిర్భవించినటువంటివి అనేటువంటి దీని ఆదిని మనం గుర్తించుకోలేకపోతున్నాం.
We have not been able to realize that all these worldly pleasures and joys have come and emerged from sorrow.
కనుక సంకల్పములను సరైనటువంటిగా విచారణ కలిపి బుద్ధికి అప్పచెప్పినప్పుడే ఇవి సరైన బుద్ధి యొక్క సమాధానం మనకు లభ్యమవుతాయి.
వెన్ యువర్ థాట్స్ ఆర్ హ్యాండెడ్ ఓవర్ టు ఇంటెలిజెన్స్ టు ఎన్క్వైర్ అండ్ యాక్సెప్ట్, దెన్ ఓన్లీ యు ఆర్ సేఫ్.
కఠోపనిషత్తునందు దేహము రథమనియు, ఇంద్రియములు గుర్రమనియు, మనసు పగ్గమనియు, బుద్ధి సారథనియు ఇవి వర్ణిస్తూ వచ్చాయి.
ఇన్ కఠోపనిషత్ ది బాడీ హ్యాస్ బీన్ ప్రిస్క్రైబ్డ్ యాజ్ చారియట్, ద మైండ్ యాజ్ ది డ్రైవర్, the mind as the rope which is tied, and the
buddhi horses.
Senses are the horses and the intelligence is the charioteer.
Ikkada ee manasu ye sthanamlo untunnadani manam chakkaga vicharinchali.
Here in phrenology we should try to find out what place is given for mind.
Ikkada gurramulaku saradiki madhyalo untundali ee pagamulu.
This rope is between the horses and the charioteer.
Anaga indriyamulaku buddhiki madhyamunnatundi manasu.
That means mind comes between the senses and intelligence.
Ee manasu madhyamunnatundi manasu buddhini anusarinchina buddhi kaligi untundi.
If the mind follows the dictates of intelligence, it will be safe.
Indriyamunu anusarinchina buddhudai అనుభవిస్తాడు.
ఇఫ్ ఇట్ ఫాలో ది డిక్టేట్స్ ఆఫ్ ది సెన్సెస్, దెన్ హి గెట్స్ ఇంటు ప్రాబ్లమ్స్.
కానీ ఈనాడు అనేక మంది ఈ యొక్క ఇంద్రియములకు దాసులై తద్వారా తాము దుఃఖములకు గురి అవుతున్నారు.
టుడే మోస్ట్ ఆఫ్ ది పీపుల్ హ్యావ్ బికమ్ స్లేవ్స్ ఆఫ్ ది సెన్సెస్ అండ్ ఆర్ ఫేసింగ్ ఇన్యూమరబుల్ ప్రాబ్లమ్స్.
ఇంద్రియములను అనుసరించడమే ప్రవృత్తి మార్గం.
ఫాలోయింగ్ ది పాత్ ఆఫ్ ది సెన్సెస్ is pravrutti margam.
Anusarinchadame nivrutti margam.
Following the dictates of intelligence is nivrutti path.
Kani adhika bhagamu pravrutti ante taneta pravartanu apavitramuga avistukuntunnaru.
Most of the people are making their lives wasted and
nivruttiki ye matram kodunu vicharana salpatam ledu.
They are not trying to go in the path of nivrutti.
Kanuka nivruttini kodunu కొంతవరకు జాగ్రత్తగా కాపాడుకోవాలి.
ఇట్ ఈస్ నెసెసరీ టు ఫాలో ది పాత్ ఆఫ్ నివృత్తి ఇన్ ఎ వెరీ సేఫ్ వే.
సారథిగా చేతిలోనే ఈ పద్ధతులు లేకపోతే గుర్రములే నడవవు.
ఇఫ్ ది చారియటర్ డస్ నాట్ హ్యావ్ ది రోప్స్ ఇన్ హిస్ హ్యాండ్, వెల్ ఇట్ ఇస్ డిఫికల్ట్ టు
సారథిని వదిలిపెట్టినటువంటి పద్ధతుల వల్లే గుర్రములు అనుసరిస్తుంటాయి ఈ మనస్సు.
ద మైండ్ యాజ్ ఇఫ్ ఈస్ ఫాలోయింగ్ ది సెన్సెస్, not being controlled by intellect.
అందులో ఈ గుర్రములు సామాన్యమైన గుర్రములు కావు.
These senses are not ordinary horses.
విషయ భోగములను కేవలం విచారం చేస్తూ పోతున్నాయి.
They go on
తిరుగుతుండాలి. ఈచ్ హార్స్ ఇస్ ట్రైన్ టు గో ఇన్ వన్ డైరెక్షన్. ఈ ప్రమాదం ఎవరికి? అండ్ హూల్ బి ఫేసింగ్ దిస్ రైములకే కాదు, నాట్ మెయిన్లీ ఫర్ ది రైములు అంటున్నటువంటి యొక్క వారికి కూడా ఈ ప్రమాదం సంభవిస్తుంది. బట్ ది చారియటర్ అండ్ ది అదర్స్ హూ ఆర్ ట్రావెలింగ్ ది చారియట్ ఆల్సో విల్ ఫేస్. ఈనాడు వేగమును అపవిత్రముగా ఉంటున్నారు. టుడే మ్యాన్ ఈస్ మేకింగ్ ది బాడీ వేగమును ఉంటున్నటువంటి ఆత్మతత్వాన్ని మనము నిర్మూలన చేస్తున్నాం. అండ్ ఆల్సో ది ప్రిన్సిపల్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ ఈస్ పుట్ టు ట్రావెల్. ఈనాడు రెండింటికి చెందినటువంటి రేవుడిగా తయారవుతున్నాడు. టుడే వీఆర్ లూజింగ్ బోత్ ఆఫ్ థింగ్స్. కనుక మానవత్వం అనేటువంటి దాన్ని చక్కగా గుర్తించాలంటే మనస్సు యొక్క తత్వాన్ని మనం గుర్తించాలి. ఇఫ్ యూ వాంట్ టు అండర్స్టాండ్ ది యూనిక్నెస్ ఆఫ్ హ్యూమానిటీ అండ్ హ్యూమన్ బీయింగ్, యూ హావ్ టు ఫస్ట్
అండర్స్టాండ్
ఇతరుల యొక్క కీళ్ల గురించి చింతిస్తూ ఉంటారు. పీపుల్ గో థింకింగ్ బ్యాడ్ ఆఫ్ అదర్స్. ఇది చాలా ప్రమాదం. దిస్ ఈజ్ గ్రేట్, దిస్ ఇస్ డేంజరస్. ఇతరుల కీడు చింతించడం చేత తనకేదో మేలు జరుగుతున్నాడని భావిస్తున్నాడు తెలివాడు. బై థింకింగ్ బ్యాడ్ ఆఫ్ అదర్స్ దే థింక్ దట్ సంథింగ్ గుడ్ వుడ్ హ్యాపన్ టు దెమ్. తాను ఇతరుల కీడు కోరినటువంటి వాడు ఇతరులకు కీడు సంభవించినప్పటికీ తిరిగి అంతకంటే అనేక రెట్లు తిరిగి వచ్చి ఆ కీడు తననే హింసిస్తుంటాడు.
వన్ హూ డిజైర్స్ టు హార్మ్ అదర్స్ హి మే సక్సెస్ ఇన్ హార్మింగ్ అదర్స్.
ఇది ఈనాటి మానవుడు గుర్తించడానికి ప్రయత్నించడం లేదు.
బట్ హీ ఆల్సో వుడ్ సఫర్. దిస్ ఇస్ నాట్ బీయింగ్
రియలైజ్. సరైనటువంటి ఆదర్శము దుర్యోధన దుశ్శాసనాధుని.
దుర్యోధన దుశ్శాసన హోల్డ్ ఎక్సలెంట్ ఎగ్జాంపుల్స్ ఫర్ దిస్.
వీరు ధర్మమూర్తులైనటువంటి పాండవుల పైన అనేక కక్షలు పూని వారి కీడును నిరంతరము చింతిస్తూ వచ్చారు.
They took enmity against the Pandavas who were following the righteous path and continuously scheming and planning.
ఏదో సంకల్పములు దుస్సంకల్పములు అయినప్పటికీ దాని యొక్క ప్రభావము కొంతవరకు పాండవుల పైన జరిగినప్పటికీ కడపటికి ఏమైపోయింది? అంతకంటే అనేక రెట్లు కీడు వీళ్ళకే సంభవించింది.
ఇన్ ది బిగినింగ్ దే పుట్ హార్మ్ పాండవాస్ బై దర్ బ్యాడ్ థాట్స్. బట్ అట్ ద ఎండ్ దే వర్ హార్మ్డ్ ఇన్ ఎ మిలియన్ ఫోల్డ్ మోర్ దాన్ ది పాండవాస్.
ఈ విషయాన్ని చక్కగా మీరు గుర్తించాలి.
డియర్ స్టూడెంట్స్ యూ షుడ్ రికగ్నైజ్ అండ్ రియలైజ్ దిస్.
ఎవరి కీడును మనం కోరరాదు.
యూ షుడ్ నెవర్ ఆస్పైర్ టు హార్మ్.
ఒక భాగంగా ఇతరుల కీడును కోరితే పది వంతులు మన కీడుకు జరుగుతుంది.
ఇఫ్ యూ వాంట్ టు హార్మ్ ఇన్ వన్ వే ఇన్ టెన్ ఫోల్డ్
హార్మ్. ఎవరిని దూషించరాదు.
యూ షుడ్ నాట్ పెనిసైజ్ ఎనీవన్.
నీవు ఇతరులు దూషించినప్పుడు నిన్ను అనేక మంది దూషిస్తారు.
ఇఫ్ యూ సెన్షర్ సమ్మన్ టెన్ అదర్స్
స్నేహితులను వంచినటువంటి వాడు స్నేహితుల చేత వంచిపబడతాడు.
ఇఫ్ యూ డిసీవ్ యువర్ ఫ్రెండ్స్ యువర్ ఫ్రెండ్స్ విల్ ఆల్సో డిసీవ్ యూ.
తండ్రి మాటను ధిక్కరించినటువంటి వాడు తన కుమారుల చేత ధిక్కరింపబడతాడు.
ఎ సన్ హూ డిజోబేస్ హిస్ ఫాదర్ విల్ బి డిజోబేడ్ బై హిస్ ఓన్ సన్.
తనను హింసించినటువంటి వాడు పరుల చేతి హింసిపబడతాడు.
ఎ పర్సన్ హూ హర్ట్స్ అదర్స్ విల్ హర్ట్ బై అదర్.
ఈ రియాక్షన్ రీసౌండ్ అండ్ రిఫ్లెక్షన్ ఈ మనసు యొక్క ప్రభావం.
This reaction, resound and reflection is the nature and impact of mind.
Kanuka manam evarini kudanu ee vidhanga kudanu dushinchata kani himsinchata kani manam prayatninchakoddu.
That is why we should never undertake to criticize or harm others.
It's quite interesting that Swami started with that same point which sir was telling about fear, and in fact Swami even sang that very padyam.
He has done that number of times in many discourses.
Sir, Swami is talking about fear. What exactly is saying the root cause for fear here? He says is the absence of pure and sacred thoughts in the minds of men. And you know, going by what Swami told in the previous clip, a bad thought is one that keeps you separate from another human being.
Yeah.
So basically, the moment you start feeling that everybody is one and the same, then the fear in your mind vanishes. Is that how it is?
That is true, but that is a very difficult concept to realize, that it is difficult for us to see that you and I are one.
Correct.
There's a simple solution Swami had given to that.
Mm-hmm.
The faith is the antidote for fear.
Ooh.
He said, for example, if you don't have faith that you go to the office and return back to the home in the evening, you will not go to the office at all. If you go to the barber, he will cut your hair, not your throat. If you don't have that faith, you won't go to the barber. So it is the faith that makes us do things in this world. So one way to overcome fear is that the faith that no harm will come, I can succeed that. So that way you can put a lid on the fear. That's what he said. But then how does that faith come? The faith, probably sometimes it depends on the individual situation, things like a child has got a faith in mother or parents, or sometimes you have a faith in your friend. So faith basically comes from various things that have happened to you in life.
True.
And the best thing is, if you've got a faith in God, then that protection, that faith comes in all situations all the time, because this is all limited. Mm-hmm. Whereas faith in God will comes there because He is there all the time within and around all that. And therefore, having faith in God always gives you courage to do things, and thereby you can overcome fear. And this is a common experience for all of us. When I came here, I had a fear of what I'm going to do. But anyway, I knew that He will take care of me, put me through that, because He has done 1,000 times. This is 1,001+ time. So with that faith, I took bit to an extent I could overcome my fear of coming to this meeting. So the faith is one of the things that can help us to overcome the fear.
You know, sir, even as you were saying that, remember one of the devotees shared that when they came in the 1940s and 50s, he came pretty well placed in life, but then was, you know, went to go through a lot of torment in life. He lost a lot of money and all that. But all through, Swami was telling them, I'm going to take care of you. But you can imagine that they were not completely having that kind of rock-solid faith on Swami, because Swami was still a new entity in their life. So he said that at one point it was, you know, it was a matter of life and death. So the husband and wife come together and they recollect, see, we have the situation in hand, we have a lot of problem, and here is a person who's, you know, who seems to be not an ordinary person, but he's telling, have faith in me. So then they say, they look back and they said, nothing that he did was for himself. Whatever he told us, there's nothing he's going to benefit out of it. And whatever he said, whatever he asked us to do, was in a way going to benefit us. So they said, there's absolutely nothing wrong in having faith in him. So they made a resolve that whatever happens, how much our doubt comes our way, we're going to have faith in him. You know, the many ways in which people have established that faith in Swami, we often think that, you know, experience leads to faith. But I think Swami has always emphasized that faith is the one which leads to the experience.
Yes. Faith is the most important thing for anything, either for living or for spiritual progress. Whatever it is, without faith, you cannot do anything in this world. That's what human beings need.
I don't mind repeating it again when I have repeated this many times, but there is no harm in repeating it again. When some of the students ask Swami, Swami, how to develop faith in you? Swami said, either you have faith or you don't have faith. You can't say I'll have 20% faith on Monday and 40% on Wednesday. Is it either it is there or not there? So what you're saying is, once you develop that faith, then there is no fear.
No, you have to have the faith that He will give a faith to you. No, that's what it is. Few things will happen, few incidents will happen. While it is happening, you are not aware what is happening. The greatest advantage of Swami's devotees have is, at least in the postmortem, they will realize that His hand was there, yes, walked you through that. And that gives the confidence. So 3-4 incidents like that will put you right on the track, and you are very sure, okay, He will take care. And if He's not taking care, He has got a good reason for that. That kind of a logic comes to the most of the devotees who come to Swami, and that's why they are better off than others.
So that's basically surrender. Like, the moment you accept that whatever is happening to you is good for you, whether Swami does this for you or doesn't do it for you, you accept it.
Well, surrender, right? Because these are all the words which work at various levels. Various levels. So, yes, you can call it as a kind of surrender, but it's more than surrender. I understand it's more a belief. You accept it, He's going to do it for you. That's not that you accept. Surrender means in every aspect of Him. No, on other things we question Him. We find fault with Him. Even when He is helping us, we start shouting, you are not helping me. Surrender won't do that. A person who has surrendered will not say that. But you have somewhere deep in your heart, okay, when things go out of my hand, He will be there to help me out. That kind of faith will...
But I think that's what Swami says about practice. That even that spontaneously faith coming instead of fear. When put in a situation, fear is the most spontaneous thing. And as Sir said, you know, you look back and you have that faith. But I think with practice, that spontaneous thing can be faith.
No, once the faith starts coming up, you know, even when you see the fear, the faith will give you courage to Face that.
Face it.
Mm. It is not that the Swami will remove everything from your life. If that is the case, we will not make progress. Mm. All these Absolutely. Things are there, we have to make progress. That's what he has said. But he will put it to that extent we are able to bear, work with it and overcome that. And whenever we are short of it, he will do something so that we become good enough to face that. That's kind of help he keeps giving hand from time to time. And that we inherently understand as we start living with him. And another thing you said about bad thoughts and the fear. You see, these are, I think, very intricately related.
Mm-hmm.
When do I fear you?
Mm.
If I have bad thoughts about you, I think this fellow is not trustworthy, he is capable of doing this. Then more and more of my fear comes out.
Correct.
Whereas I start, I don't have bad thoughts about you, good thoughts about you, and I have a bit of love for you, then automatically the fear between us doesn't exist.
Correct.
So, it is that bad thoughts, thinking about unnecessarily people and criticizing people, these are the things which are really causing. And that's why Swami is very against about people talking against, criticizing people, saying something bad about others. He will never tolerate if something is said in his presence.
In fact, that is also something which Swami says towards the end of this clip.
Mm-hmm.
The point of criticizing, what we heard just now, Swami is telling about criticizing and doing things to harm others.
Because the point which most often we forget is, thoughts are not just thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever thing we think, it gets written onto our personality. It goes into that chitta there.
Mm-hmm.
And it is there. And therefore, when the time comes, it comes out. Without knowing, I might have criticized you. So my mind is already tuned to that kind of colors. And it assumes that when the time comes. Whereas I look good, people talk about nice things like that. Those things will come to our help. So it is good that always, that's why I said, say good, be good, talk, all that, you know, it's just to try to put as many good things to us as possible. That's how Swami has been advising.
So basically, what your senses see and perceive, based on that, you get thoughts.
Sure.
And your thoughts are also influenced by what you see and perceive, by the senses.
Not only that, what kind of thoughts come, because you may see the same scene,
mm-hmm.
different people react differently. That depends on their samskaras.
Oh.
So, I mean, there are certain innate things every soul inherits from birth to birth.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, one person reacts very violently. One fellow realizes it, but somehow he doesn't have courage to act to that. And some fellow takes it very cool. So, these same thing, different people react differently because of whatever samskaras or the whatever they have built during the period. It's something like that, what I was trying to say, that, you know, when you start a computer, when you switch it on, there's nothing in it.
Mm-hmm.
But as you start running, it starts loading more and more programs into it and gains capabilities. So as we live through the life,
mm-hmm.
we keep adding traits to us. And those traits depends on how strong they are. If some of the things have a very strong belief or very strong in us, that keeps coming time and again. A person who is a short-tempered, you know, for everything he will get...
Correct.
And gets angry about it. That is his trait, you see. So those things in turn will guide our thoughts.
Okay.
And therefore, in order to merely controlling thoughts means you cannot just put a stop to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's an endless process. The only way all this, doing this, and Swami has said, he said one way is simply like, you know, he always used to put his kerchief. See, is the kerchief is holding the hand or hand is holding the kerchief? You turn the hand, kerchief falls. It is the hand that's... Similarly, you said that I have this problem. Problem is not holding you. You drop the problem, it is gone.
Wow.
That is true. That is very simple.
Mm.
But unfortunately, we are not in a position to drop the problem as such.
Mm-hmm.
But by slowly, through discrimination and logic, we can weaken its effect.
Mm.
Slowly. That means every thought gets a weight attached to that.
Mm.
It's not just we think we give some importance to it. So how much importance we give to a thought is the most important thing.
So basically you're saying that thought, if it is guided by the intelligence, by buddhi.
Yes.
Then
that is the buddhi which adds the weight to that.
Okay.
And that if you are discriminatively adding, look, this is not good, I should not pay attention to that, you ignore it.
Mm.
You will see that, you will experience it, but it just passes off. For example, we are going in the road, we see so many people. We get attracted to only few of them, not everybody.
Mm.
So in the same way, thoughts are continuously passing in our mind. Just keep watching them. That's why Swami says, whenever a thought comes, don't put that into action immediately. Give a small break to that.
Oh.
Let the mind think about the buddhi, think about, discriminate it. Then you act that.
Mm.
And he says, any thought which is put into action, it becomes physical, you become punishable. Because you do a karma. Mm. Whereas just a thought is just a thought. At least the physical level of the world, you may think of many things, but nobody can punish you for that. But the moment you do it, you have it.
Mm.
And therefore, don't convert every thought into action unless you are sure that it's going to give benefit to you. So that's where the buddhi part comes into picture.
Mm.
You're talking about, you know, problems and we holding the problems and not ready to let go. No, one famous psychologist, he says, he describes the patients who come to him. He says they are like people who are neck deep in a cesspool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and none of the patients want to come out of the pool. They come to the doctor to tell, make sure nobody makes waves. Because they say, we want to be in there, but just make sure we are comfortable in there.
That's true. For example, most of the diseases, Swami said that 80 to 90% of the diseases are mental.
Oh.
Physical diseases are much, much smaller in number.
Mm.
If you start believing you do not have a disease, you will not have it.
Mm.
It all depends on what strength of mind you accept that. And we must have been doing it, you know, many times in our own lives. For example, one day you must be tired, exhausted. You think you cannot do it, but the work is so demanding, you start to forget about it.
Correct.
Only when the work is over, you realize that how did you do it, but what happened? The disease was not there, it was there, but the other thing is so powerful, your mind was completely on it, it had no time to think about that. And that's how the mind is to be diverted.
Mm.
And that's what Swami says, and often replace the bad thoughts by good thoughts.
Exactly. Here again he mentions pravritti marga, nivritti
marga.
So, having the senses go towards outward is pravritti marga, and having them go inward is nivritti marga.
You know, so beautifully Swami puts it, he says, manas is the reins, the buddhi is the charioteer, the senses are there. So if the senses are pulling, then it's pravritti marga. If the buddhi is in control of the reins, then it's nivritti marga.
Yes.
You know, how wonderfully, of course, it's Swami is quoting from the Kathopanishad, but
no, if we really try to understand this and try to put it at least one or two instances, you will see that it has an effect. You may not be able to do it every day, but at least in some situations, critical situations, difficult situations, where we need to think about it and do things, probably it is possible for us to try this and do with it.
Sir, what's your experience with intuition, for example? Like, you know, you are really in a very difficult situation in life.
Mm.
Now we are talking about mind, intelligence, buddhi and senses and all that.
Mm.
There comes a time when everything stops and suddenly you get a flash.
So basically what prompts everything is Atma.
Okay.
Okay. So whenever one is tuned to that,
mm-hmm.
because Atma is all the time prompting.
Okay.
For example, you think what you want to do it. Suppose you are waiting there, two buses come, which bus I should take? Something tells you take this bus.
Mm-hmm.
What is that which is telling?
Mm.
He didn't have any logic reason, all that. So that is something which is innate in you, tells you. But the moment that comes, the mind start arguing, no, this bus looks old, dilapidated, it may not take me in time, I may not take, even though this is longer route, this bus would. No, that kind of logic changes. So many times in situations when we see the answer comes from the mind. I'll tell you one example which I understood, for example. Here itself is there, help ever, hurt never.
Correct.
I used to think, help ever, what way, why should help? Help ever, what way should? Kept on thinking, and suddenly something told me, help ever to empower.
Oh.
Help ever to empower. Hmm. So if you are able to really do that, that's the best way of helping, you see.
Hmm.
If you help somebody to empower, that problem is once and for all solved.
To empower him to solve his own problem.
Yeah. Oh. You help him to empower.
Hmm.
Help him to empower. So that's the best way to solve a problem. That's the golden way to help somebody. rather than doing something and then leave it at that.
That will be a temporary thing.
Yes, yes.
Typically, right?
So now, how did I come to know about it? I never thought about it. In fact, the word empower was not there in my mind at all. I just kept on thinking how it is there. And suddenly, so that way many times Swami has taught me many things. Just something comes in mind, I keep thinking about it. Some way the answer comes. But I have learned over a period of time, all such answers are from him and I accepted them, they are from him.
Yes.
So that helped me a lot, either in my subject or in my day-to-day life or understanding spiritual things or something Swami expects me to do. All these things help me to do that because of whatever that speaks from inner voice. That's intuition.
I think the problem with intuition it's like Swami sometimes telling, no, now utesamlo itla cheste bagundi. Instead of telling us in affirmative and very forcefully, my opinion.
He will never tell you do this in very, very rare situations. And where he is probably obliged to protect that fellow, only then he will say, do this. Otherwise, he will always give advice. I'll leave the choice for you to do it. Yes. This we have seen many, many times. Many things. He will never, because he is Akshibhuti basically. He is not concerned. In his level, everything is good. There is nothing like bad. Everything is good for him. And therefore, he will not describe, he will not sit on a judgment. He knows that this fellow is going to do something very different than what is expected of him. But when he is giving him, he will not think of that. He will just give whatever is to be given then. When that point comes, that day he will act. But today, he will not take that as the reason to the way he behaves with him.
Typically what we do in our daily interactions.
He typically lives in the present. Typically, all the time ever lives in the present. And that you can see him from his actions, from his words. And when he's talking to somebody, whatever the fellow is saying, he's not concerned about it. Only when he turns to me, he will talk to him. So that is, I mean, the place for all of us, you know, it has been kind of a lab to experiment on divinity, you know, how God works.
Correct.
And when I look at that Devanki Dev picture, you know, I see everything and everything I see Swami. Whatever we have been seeing him, whatever he has been doing, it's a typical thing, it is still present there. So
this, basically how we saw Swami and perceived him in flesh and blood, that's how the Atma is inside us.
Right. It's telling us all the time.
No, that's not how. I think that is
sorry.
And that is where the difference between a spiritually evolved person and an ordinary person. Because for him, the mind doesn't exist. Whatever tells, he thinks it is from the Atma and he will try to follow it. In fact, I remember one Swami said, if you think that the mind itself is the Atma, all your problems are finished.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because I did not understand, I still don't understand. Probably what he means is that whatever mind says, because the mind always comes in between. Moment something, some thought, some concept comes to you, it tries to debate it. Good, bad, wait, all that. But if you start thinking that itself is from the Atma, it is all fresh from the inner being, automatically it will fall in place somewhere. Because there is nothing like bad, and ultimately it will turn out to be good. It's only the root that matters. And so slowly you will start listening more to that.
In fact, as we were discussing in Swami's letter, historic letter to his brother, he says, my definition of a devotee is one who does not see the difference between good and bad. There is no difference between good and bad.
That's what he said, that he chapter advised the Sarva Bhutanam. That is his definition of a devotee. So, I remember somebody asked him, are you a follower of Swami? And this fellow looked at him, I'm not sure about it, but I'm sure that he's following.
Swami is a follower of mine.
So, that's what it is. When it comes to Swami, see, the story is entirely different. It doesn't depend on how much we are devoted to him, how much faith we have in him. What exactly is the reason he does things for us, he alone knows.
So, that's what the power that is inside each one of us has come down in that physical form.
Precisely.
And he is there right in front of us.
What we could not perceive, see, is he has come out there to show that this is how it is. You trust it. Now if we can take that back into us again and feel that he is not, that he is still there, we don't miss him, and I think we experience him.
It's like keeping a mobile reminder for something which is already in your pocket.
Right.
If you're looking for it sometime, it's here. And
but that's also the reason how Swami knew everything about everybody. Because he is the one who, the power who is inside each one of us.
He is in everybody, that's what it is. Because when he is with you, he is you.
Correct.
That's why he will tell everything, anything, even thoughts which you are not aware of it, he will tell. That is his greatest power and that's his main weapon.
Oh.
To tell you, you bloody fellow, I know everything what you are doing. You better know about it now. And so listen to me what I say. So one of the first things he does with most of the new devotees to convince him that he is aware of everything that particular person is. Sometimes even passing thoughts which you have not observed. He brings it out. Saying that this is what you have been thinking now.
Mm-hmm.
And that will have a tremendous effect. I remember once he was talking to some philosophy professors from Chennai. So he was explaining what is philosophy, things like that. I was listening to it and then suddenly asked me, what did I tell you? What did I tell now? That particular moment I was not listening to.
Oh.
My mind went off. He just gave a smile and then again continued.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that why he stopped in the middle and saying that even that particular moment that I was not paying attention to what he is aware of it.
Mm.
And now that is, it is sometimes shocking, sometimes good. Because when you are not doing things you are not expected to do, that's a big force to correct you. And when you are in trouble, you are also confident that he knows about it, he will take care of you.
Mm.
So that's how he brings in faith. Not that by telling stories, this kind of things he will do like.
Just one
particular thing. And one thing he does for you will impact million things around you.
Mm. Mm.
He may be talking to you, but the same thing he's talking to is affecting 100 fellows around you. Many times he was talking to me, I know that it was nothing to do with me.
Mm.
It was meant for somebody else. He's around it. So that's how he brings in faith. Because we asked, how does he bring faith? That's how he brings in faith. So, Nivritti Parthi we're talking about.
That's what. I mean, living with God is true education.
That is. That is. Those three sentences are golden sentences. Living with God is education. Living for God is devotion. Living in God is spirituality. Now, at least the first level happens to most of us. When we are living with him, we make sure that we learn something. Yes.
Correct. I think unfortunately, sir, we are running out of time.
I think
that's the beauty of talking about Swami. There is absolutely no account of how much time has passed.
Right. I don't know whether I have taken away from you the main topic of the discourse.
No, sir, the main topic of the discourse is always Swami, and I think we will never be going away by talking about Swami.
That is true. But anyway, thanks a lot for calling me here, because one way to be with him is to talk about him again and again and again. What helps others are, I'm not sure about it, but definitely this helps me. This is what manana. So I have been able to think about all those things which otherwise I would not have thought about it. And so that's a great opportunity to be with him this 1 hour through various aspects. And I'm highly obliged to you boys for this.
In fact, this 1 hour, our minds are also focused only on Swami. So that is how you can focus the mind.
That's what we always say. We don't know how many listeners listen to us, this program, how many benefit from it. But one thing is absolutely sure, there is no taking away that we are the biggest beneficiaries of sitting here and talking about Swami and listening to Swami. So on behalf of all our listeners, sir, thank you so much for being a part of this program. It was truly enlightening to have you accompany here.
Don't thank me. It's the least I could do for all what he has given to me.
We really hope we have more opportunities to have you in this show. And then as we progress along the discourses, we'll get more insights into what Swami is telling and how he showed it in day-to-day life.
So dear listeners, that brings us to the end of this episode of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. We will join you next week, 7:30 on Thursday. It's time now for me to give the stage to Bishu. Bishu is here with his guest and his special program for Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai with Sai Prakash and with our special guest, Professor G.B. Prabhakar Rao, thanking you for your company and offering this program at Bhagwan's Lotus Feet. Jai Sai Ram.